So you can probably tell here you're in for something completely different here. We're the association that represents drinking water utilities, consulting engineers, manufacturers of pumps, pipes, and valves. In fact, we had our annual conference here in June, had about 12,000 people. So as the introduction said, I work with the EPA on drinking water regulations, but also with DHS. And this project, I'll go into it, some work we did with CDC to try and help out the hospitals and healthcare facilities. So again, I have no financial commitments or relationships to disclose. So real quickly, I've got a fair amount of slides. I've got an appointment. I live here. My office is about 5 blocks away. I've got an appointment back at home tonight, so I'm going to have to bug out. My email is on the last slide. I also left some cards here. If you want to get more information, you can contact me that way. So I want to talk about why it's important, why the Joint Commission is pushing this, the approach we took on the project, an overview of what should be in this plan that goes into the four steps of how to do that, one hospital case study, and then what we're in now, which is really the outreach part of the plan. So clearly, in a community, hospitals and healthcare facilities are an important part of that community. And it's even more critical in an emergency. And I'm thinking of natural disasters. If you have a hurricane or a flood, the hospitals are sort of a point of refuge. And in those kind of emergencies, water supply is also critical. And everyone thinks about water supply as drinking water, but you just got to think of all these other uses. Fire protection, sanitary sewer, it's the way you remove the waste in the toilet, food preparation, and then HVAC, which is important when you look at a hospital setting. The thing I also say about drinking water and food preparation, just think about how grumpy you get if you don't have coffee for a couple days. So there are a lot of areas. From our point of view, on the water supply, we have to be prepared for emergencies in a different way. And a big issue is emergency backup power. If you imagine the snowstorm that hit the Northeast, if there's a lot of power outages now, if the water plant doesn't have power, then they don't pump the water, and you depressurize the system pretty quick. We had Hurricane Isabel in this area in 2003 and lost power where I live in Virginia, and my house depressurized in about 6 hours. So within 6 hours, you turn on the faucet, you'd hear like a hissing sound, which is not what you're used to hearing. Fortunately, I had, being working in the business, I had about 5 cases of bottled water in the basement and filled up all the pots and pans. I kind of knew what was going to happen. And the reason it's important is at some point, the supply will likely go down. If it's not a natural disaster, I have all these wide variety of weather events at the bottom, it may be a main break right outside the water main, right outside the facility. So you get about 15 breaks per 100 miles per year. If you got a big 12-inch main outside your front door and that breaks, the system's going to go down. It may only be for 6 or 8 hours, but you will lose pressure. And I have this next slide here of a crazy operator in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, who stuck his head outside the door during the tornado and got a picture. You can see the water plant in the foreground and the tornado in the background. Now, if you can imagine if that had been on top of the water plant and had flattened that, how long would it take to get water back in that facility? So, again, he was close, did some minor damage to their facilities, but not to the water plant. But it's a pretty impressive picture, even with the guy's finger there in the viewfinder, because I'm not very picky. I wouldn't have been doing that. So, again, think if you're a hospital or healthcare facility, and we talk about hospitals a lot, but it's really any healthcare facility. We tried to tailor this plan to work for the big regional hospitals, nursing homes, assisted care facilities, dialysis centers, you know, anywhere where you provide healthcare, water supply is important. For hospitals, it's part of their emergency operation plan and part of the Joint Commission standards. And this is really a quote out of their standard about how to manage all utilities during an emergency. So what the hospitals need to do is be able to provide a backup supply for 96 hours, just like they're able to provide electrical power for 96 hours. And that's a little bit of a shift. Most hospitals have had the generators. They know how to test them. They know how to make that work. Providing water supplies, we'll see, can be a substantial undertaking. So we think all these facilities need to have a plan, and this is what our project is the guide to how to do that. It'll vary a lot based on the size of your facility. So we thought at one point we might be able to have a template, an Excel spreadsheet, but we realized there's too much scalability between a small hospital in the country and one of the big ones in the metro areas. So if you're in a small facility, it could be relatively simple. It could be one person. If you're the facilities manager at a nursing home, you're the person that's going to do that. If you're in a larger facility, a regional hospital, you're going to need a team that represent the different skill sets at that facility. And I'll talk more about that later on in the slide. So that's what we were trying to do in this project, was to develop a guide to fit this need. It was a collaborative effort between our association, I was a project manager on this, and the folks down at CDC, we had a consultant to provide the technical support, do a lot of the writing, a lot of the production. We had a work group that included the American Society of Healthcare Engineering. That's a spinoff group from the American Hospital Association that focuses on the facility guys. We had a person from DHS and somebody from the Region 5 Office of EPA. So this group met by conference calls and workshops on a regular basis as we were developing this guide. So what we wanted to do is to start off trying to figure out, well, what kind of interruptions in water supply have the hospitals experienced. So we worked through ASHE to do a survey. They did a fact survey and said, you know, who's had an interruption in supply and would be willing to participate in an interview. And so we interviewed 12 regional hospitals in the spring and summer of 2009. And in that interview, it became very quickly, there were two kind of main categories. You'd have that water main break outside your facility, and you'd be down for 4 to 6 to 8 hours because the utility could go out and fix that main break and get things back online. And then you had these significant regional weather events. And in the time frame that we did, it was mainly hurricanes, but again, that could be a wide range of weather events. Floods, tornadoes, ice storms, wildfires. If you think about all the things that have happened, you know, it could be a wide range. So these kind of events would make the water supply go down for typically greater than 8 hours. So then the solution for the hospital is more complex. And I'll talk more about that. If you can think about kind of a tiered approach, you start with the easy solutions, and then it gets more complex as the supply interruption continues. So based on those interviews, we developed a set of decision flow charts based on what we thought, how you could incrementally build your options for the water supply. We did that later in 2009. We had a workshop in December to try and ground truth the draft. We pulled in several people from hospitals and healthcare facilities, and they recommended that we really try and make it a standalone document to be very easy to walk through. So we had to make a lot of revisions. We submitted to CDC last year. The final draft went in late in 2010, and then it was released on the CDC website in summer 2011. So now you can find this on CDC's Healthy Water website, and again, it's a PDF document that you can download and use to build your plan. So let me walk through about how you do that. There's really four steps, I think, that are pretty simple. You put together your team and you get your background documentation. You understand your water usage through an audit and what you might be able to do to reduce that usage during an emergency. You analyze your alternatives, and then based on your analysis and based on your local conditions, you develop your plan. You test and exercise that plan, and then you revise as appropriate. So I'm going to go into details about each one of these steps. Again, if you're at a big regional hospital, you're going to need a wide variety of people on your team. It's usually typically led by somebody in the facilities department, but you really need to include all these other functions to make it work. And then you want to think about your external partners, and my next slide goes into that. These are some people to think about going outside the organization to bring in for that planning process. Again, I think it's important to talk to your local water utility. Most water utilities that I work with have some relationship with the hospitals because they're critical customers. But if you don't, you should. There should be some sort of one-on-one personal relationship between that hospital and the water utility. Clearly, the local health department, the local EMA, and the fire department. If EPA is in the region, if their regional office is in your city, that's good to clue them in. And then importantly, you need to think about the other hospitals in the area. And this is one thing that we found, that in a lot of cases, the hospitals will go to one or two bottled water vendors in the region, and they all have a contract for an emergency. And if you have an emergency in the region, the guy just physically can't supply it all. He doesn't have the capacity, doesn't have the storage, doesn't have the trucks, doesn't have the ability to make deliveries to everybody. So you want to make sure that the resources aren't over-allocated. Some of that will depend on an emergency. If you just have that main break, you can divert your patients to another hospital. You can sort of make things work. But again, if it's a hurricane and the power's gone down and it's a regional problem, you might be over-allocated. The background documentation, after you assemble your team, you need to focus on your facility drawings. And coming out of the engineering background, you got to realize that if you've got a site plan that shows where your water lines and your valves are, that may not always be accurate. Things change over time. You have campuses that build over time. The valves and the pipes may not be exactly where you think they are. You want to try and get as detailed water demand as you can, but in most cases that I've seen, It's just really what your water bill is. You might have more than one bill if you have more than one meter. You might have more detailed information on the newer part of the hospital where they've done detailed analysis, but maybe not on the old part. So now you try and do a water audit. And what you're trying to do here is really determine what your normal usage is, and then what's critical within operation of that facility. What can you not do during an emergency? And then from that, what are going to be your water conservation measures? And then what's your plan going to be for reducing your usage during an emergency? So it's pretty logical. You just have to think about what you can and can't do, what you have to do in an emergency, and what you might be able to wait till later. But one of the big issues is that HVAC is typically the largest user for a hospital. And if you think about how most buildings are built, you really don't have the ability to operate without HVAC. You can't crack open the window. If you don't have heat, you've got a problem. But can you modify your operations? Can we reduce the blowdown in your cooling towers? Or might there be another source of makeup water? But there are other uses that need to be considered, and I'm not going to, we don't have a lot of timers, I don't want to, but just think about the ranking of the water usage in your facility. If you have HVAC as number one, what would be two, what would be three? How would you rank these, and then think about criticality? That's really what you're trying to blend, is what's the use and what's the criticality. And that's what my next slide talks about. You know, what are your absolutely critical functions in the hospital? And are there waterless alternatives? Clearly, you can serve food in a different way. You can delay for a period of time. Laundry, you can't do that forever. Some are simple, but some get very complex very quickly. And then you also need to understand what the reduction in that water use will be. Because in some cases, you may jump through a hoop just to save a gallon here or a gallon there. If you still need it for the HVAC, you've got to solve that problem first. So again, try and develop your list based on your usage, on how you're going to reduce your use. And you may have a tiered approach where as your emergency evolves, you're going through increasing stringency triggers in increasing your water conservation as time evolves. You may do some measures in the first 2 hours, the next set from 2 to 8. So again, if you want to think about it for a few seconds, think about what could I do in my facility to reduce the water use. So now we'll go to step 3, is to look at your alternatives. So as I will present in my next few slides, you need to consider a wide variety of alternatives and alternative water supplies in your plan. And this major break point, we think, is in that 8-hour time frame. That if you know you have a main break, you call the water utility and say, hey, we'll be out there in 2 hours, we'll have it fixed in 4, that's a very defined time frame, and you know you can get by with bottled water and other alternatives. If you call them up and they say, hey, you know, that's a 16-inch main, there's a valve that broke, we don't know if we have the valve, now it's unknown, you need to plan for that. If you have a hurricane hit and you call the water utility and they're out of power and they tell you they don't know, then again, that's typically a more complex solution. So the guide has decision trees for these different alternatives that I'll run through. So again, if you are less than 8 hours, it's simpler to use bottled water for drinking. But you ought to be aware of the storage and rotation issues. Again, in my own personal experience, we keep 4 or 5 cases of bottled water in our basement, but I do rotate them out. You know, I buy a new case, I put it at the bottom, set the other ones on top. Like my daughter is an athlete in high school. She's always taking 2 or 3 bottles every day. And so that works in my house. It may not work if you've got pallets of that in a warehouse somewhere on the site. You can also use this for more than 8 hours. It works pretty well for drinking. And you can use these larger containers for food preparation or hand washing. And again, both of these will work for those longer time frames for those two uses. You can use these larger containers for toilet flushing. But if you think about a 55-gallon barrel, it's pretty heavy. So you've got to have hand trucks and dollies. You've got to have maybe belts for the staff to wear. You've got to figure out how you're going to move it around. In some cases, you might have a backup groundwater well, and you need to make sure that that's potable, and I'll talk a little more about that. And then some people say, well, I have this decorative pond out front. I'll just use that pond for my HVAC, my cooling tower. And you think about the implications to your cooling tower, because that could gum it up, you could get algae in there, and the repair and reconstruction of that might be more than a different alternative. So now I'll go for these longer time frames, greater than 8 hours. So again, you have all the alternatives on different kind of bottles, containers. We can also think about storage tanks, other nearby sources, the use of tankers, bladders, and portable treatment devices. So in some cases, you might have a nearby storage tank. Again, in my area in Fairfax, Virginia, there's a storage tank adjacent to one of the main Inova hospitals, but it's owned by the water utility. So, you know, they can dedicate some of the storage for the hospital, but they want to keep the majority of the storage for the balance of their system. So it's not really dedicated. There may be an old tank that you see nearby, but it could be an industrial-grade water. It might not be potable water. And then you think about what's required to use the water. There are elevated tanks. You can see them up in the air. They're ground storage tanks. Then you have to think about pumping. And then, again, if you're working with a water utility, you need to have a discussion about the usable volume of water, because they have to keep some of that tank for fire flows. And so not all that water in the tank is available if you can work out a deal with them. You may be able to use another nearby source. You might be lucky and be on a boundary between one water supply and one adjacent. So you may have another system that's maybe a quarter mile or away where you could lay out some portable pipe and be able to get water from an adjacent system. You might be right at that boundary line. So you need to know that. There may be a groundwater well nearby, or there may be a creek that you could use in an emergency. But again, if that's the case, you're going to have to do full treatment. I'll talk about that later. So then you need to get an engineer involved to understand the capacity of these other sources, and that's going to meet all your critical uses. And then what you need to do to bring that water to your facility, do any treatment, and then continue to pump it. So if you have a multi-story building, you can't just bring it to the front door. You got to figure out how you're going to pump it up to your upper floors. So tanker transport of water is one of the more viable alternatives. But again, it's just sort of asking these right questions. You got to assume that you're getting it from a potable source. They're using food-grade trucks to bring it. And then you need to make sure that you've got sanitary connections for the hoses, the connections, and a way to pump it into the building. And so, you know, you can have these tanker trucks into a rotation, but in all likelihood, you're also going to need some place to put it when you're at the when they bring the water to the facility. So you need these bladders. So pretty good rotation might be as a series of tanker trucks and bladders. You bring it there, and then you pump it into the facility. Yeah, I'm getting close. There's some other storage units, smaller ones. Again, these are good for the smaller uses, but typically won't work for a large facility. The last resort should be treatment. If you put in a one of these skid-mounted units, in a lot of cases it'll trigger all the state regulatory requirements for a certified operator and monitoring requirements. And again, not all treatments work for different waters. I'm a civil engineer by training. You know, we have classes and you know, books about how you pick the right treatment for the right water. It's not very simple. So the last step, again, you're likely going to have a variety of options for a facility plan. Again, bottled water is great for drinking and food preparation, but doesn't work very well for HVAC. So those large demands need a large supply. And again, we didn't do a template because of the wide variety of facilities out there. We really developed more of a logical guide and the thought processes to help you develop your own guide. So just a couple more slides here. If you develop your plan, these are the kind of things you want to try and include. Just, you know, what kind of facility you are, what your water demand, any kind of drawings. And then any kind of contracts that you have for provision of emergency supply, bottled water, tanker trucks, your plan, your implementation timeline during the emergency, how you're going to recover. Do you want to do any surveillance of the patients in the hospital after the incident? Does this change your health, the quality of your health care? And then as part of that, how you're going to improve this over time. It's important that you test and exercise the plan. It shouldn't sit on a shelf. Again, a very easy scenario would be a main break in front of the building. We're down for 6 hours. What are we going to do? You use the lessons learned to revise it and improve it. And then we're working on some tabletop training materials. So again, you have this list of internal partners, external partners. They ought to be part of your exercise. And again, think about who ought to be on your list, you know, who you know now and who you need to know. You want to have a personal relationship before the emergency, not be exchanging the business cards on the hood of that pickup truck. So again, these are the four steps for the plan. Just real quick, one case study. Down in North Carolina, a large academic research medical center had an outage in 1999 with Hurricane Floyd. You can see all the different measures they did to try and keep an operation during that water outage. They had an external water hookup. They ended up using fire trucks to bring in water. And then they finally were able to use a rehab pool as sort of their temporary reservoir when they're rotating these fire trucks in. They eventually went to a backup well, and it's you can't really see, but there's a piece of pipe missing on that pipe that's coming out of the ground. They keep it an air gap with flanges on it, and they come back in and put the spool piece of pipe in during an emergency. So this works in the state that they're not, it's not considered a permitted well. They don't have to have all the certified operators. It's really just for emergency use only. So again, we think it's important that you have an emergency water supply plan. These interruptions will happen. Our utilities are pretty good, but nobody's perfect. The major break point is at 8 hours. It's more complex if you have an 8-hour outage. And again, it's important to have a variety of options in your plan. Again, we just got released in this summer. We've had a lot of outreach. Again, that's why I'm here. We had a webcast with the Healthcare Sector Coordinating Council. We had about 1,000 participants. What we're trying to do is get this into the right people's hands. We don't want people just to download the guide. We want them to develop the plan and be ready for an emergency. So that's my contact information. Again, I have to sort of run out to meet my family, but if you want to send me an email, that's how to get a hold of me. So.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it.